Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is a reading from New Scientist, 1st of February 2020, The Reality. And I must admit, it is something which perhaps is might be have something in it. It's probably more irritating than actually having good, strong content. But let's read it anyway. The harder we look, the less real it seems. We humans have a bit of a problem with reality. We experience it all the time, but struggle to define it, let alone understand it. It seems so solid, and yet, when we examine it closely, it melts away like a mirage. We don't know when it began, what, how big it is, where it came from, where it's going, and we certainly have no clue why it exists. You know, I have questions about that. I think we do know when the Big Bang. Okay. Nevertheless, the desire to understand reality seems part of our nature. We have come a long way. What was once explained in terms of divine creation is now the purview of science. Over the past 200 years or so, we have peeled back the layers of reality, even if we are still not entirely sure what we have revealed. If anything, the mystery has only deepened. We are now at a point where it is equally credible to claim that reality is entirely dependent on subjective experience, or entirely independent of it. Reality has never felt so unreal. Gee, that just makes me vomit. Over the next 10 pages, we delve into the latest ideas about reality from our own everyday experience to the fundamental physics and seeks to describe the true nature of the cosmos. The ideas can be dizzying, but there is no greater intellectual challenge than trying to grasp the meaning of everything. I don't know if you notice that hopefully some of the cognitive spiderwebs are being blown away by just sheer practice. Okay, there's a six expert speakers, a mind-melting trip of science reality to London, March 2028. I don't know what that means. What is reality anyway? It is a big and bewildering concept of reality, an abstract way of saying everything that there is. That's a lot to take in: space, time, matter, energy, forces, consciousness, even abstract ideas. How do we even start? Okay. I don't know whether you can put abstract ideas in there. Okay, Nobel Prize winning physicist Richard Feynman once described the quest to understand reality a bit like watching a game of chess without knowing the rules. By observing the game, we slowly get to grips with what the pieces are and how they are allowed to move and interact. By roughly the middle of the 20th century, physicists thought they had at least identified the fundamentals of the game, particles and quantum fields. Particles make up the matter and energy around us, and the quantum fields were responsible for the forces like electromagnetism. Yeah, well, quantum matter has an effect on the field. I don't understand what it means. The rules of games were set by quantum theory. The standard model has broadly stood the test of time. So that's the leptons and quarks. Leptons, quarks, hadrons, baryons, baryonic matter. They're baryon something. A baryon is the quark is the fundamental part to it. Okay, the discovery of the final missing piece, the Higgs boson, or... It's a scalar boson, isn't it? It's not a vector, it's a scalar field boson. It was the confirmation of at least we're on the right track. It is arguably fulfills at least one philosophical definition of reality. What exists and what does it do? I was talking to philosopher Tim Malden at New York University. If you had answered both these questions, then you have essentially cracked the problem of reality. But the standard model is nowhere near a complete answer. It leaves out many things. I don't know. The Planck little bodies of interaction seems interesting, and how we talk about action. I think we've gone down the particle direction too quickly. We've sort of gone We've left momentum asides. The physicists are pretty sure are real, even if they have yet to be characterised, including dark matter and dark energy. And it can't account for the force that substantially defines our experience of reality, gravity. I don't understand what they're talking about. Despite high hopes, the Large Hadron Collider would follow the discovery of the Higgs with at least some hints about the more complex theory. None has yet been forthcoming. I think the Higgs boson does account for mass, and mass does account for gravity, and you've got the scalar field, Higgs scalar field. I think it's all wrapped up. I don't know, the memo hasn't got to this author. I don't understand. So the Higgs boson, I'll have to read the Wikipedia article on that because of its non-zero presence, non-scalar. It's zero energy is non-zero existence. I think that's the way you best describe it. And therefore, we're superconducting with respect to the Higgs field. And so part of superconducting is that we can just travel through it. I think it's quite interesting to look at. Okay, it isn't that we don't understand gravity. Okay, general relativity elegantly paints it as a consequence of deformation of fabric of space-time. Okay, the problem is that quantum theory and general relativity don't play by the same rules. If one is chess, the other is black gun. What the heck are they talking about? Quantum is predicated on reality existing in tiny, indivisible chunks, relativity on being smooth and continuous. What about the relativistic quantum equation? I don't quite understand it. This means we can't understand situations where both gravity and quantum theory are in play, such as black holes, the Big Bang, or tiny particles and gravitational fields. Okay, the most pressing challenge for the study of reality today, then, is to find a way of unifying quantum theory and relativity theory in one game. I don't think this author really has got a deep understanding of what they're writing about. Okay, I could be wrong. Quote, each of these pieces is contradicted by the other, says Carlo Rovelli of Aix-Marseille University in France. So what we need is more than sticking pieces together, we are searching for a coherent way of thinking in light of what we know. Okay. There are options at the table, not least the one Rovelli pioneered, loop quantum gravity. I find that some of the topologies in that quite interesting, which holds that space-time isn't smooth but made of tiny loops. There's also the old Stalwart string theory. But so the topology means that you can pack energy into space and it can't escape. You can tie a knot in space and that's a particle, which is out of loop theory. I wish I would say that. This says all particles and forces are points on a one-dimensional string that extends through seven or more invisible extra dimensions. Yeah, I suppose it's like the topology. I think it's up to 11 dimensions. It's the I suppose the string is a way of talking about how you can tie up. If you get two bits of light, you can tie it together as a electron and positron. Okay, both loop quantum gravity and string theory purport to solve some of the incompatibilities of explanations of gravity and quantum effects, but both do have their problems. String theory in particular can lead to some pretty outlandish interpretations of reality, such as multi-universes sees reality is the same everywhere. And the holographic principle, which holds that the three-dimensional space is actually a kind of projection onto a two-dimensional surface. Or were a multidimensional space projected into three spaces. I was just trying to think, it's David Hume is the universality principle, and induction really gets into that area. Where to find answers? A more recent avenue being explored by theoretical physicists is entanglement, a quantum phenomenon where two particles can influence one another even when they are separated by huge distances. Again, this person hasn't really read the papers on entanglement. This approach has recently shown that entanglement can define the geometry of space, which is true. I think that's it. The stronger the entanglement, the more warped space is. Oh, God, that really hurts my head. Oh, that statement really upsets me. Some physicists suggest this means that space-time emerges from quantum mechanics. Well, I'm a bit blown away by that. Who says that? In which case, quantum theory is a more fundamental description of reality and should be where we find the answers to the questions that exist from who does. This person's like, if this person was talking to me in a party, I'd just move away from them. A successful unification of quantum theory and relativity would still be glaringly incomplete, however, unless it also straightens out one of the must-have features of reality, time. And that is interesting. Time is interesting. But I think Boltzmann had a lot to say on that one. Quantum theory nearly enough ignores it. How does it? You've got a time-dependent Schrödinger wave equation. I don't know where this statement comes from. So you've got the time-independent and the time-dependent Schrödinger wave equation. That's a stunning statement. Neither can it provide the explanation for why time always appears to tick in one direction. It may be that time isn't a fundamental ingredient for reality at all, but what physicists call an emergent phenomenon. I would perhaps agree with this. One way to think about this is to imagine warming your hands in a fire. Energetic molecules in the air are bouncing against your skin, warming it up. Or surely there must be radiation, would be one effect. But we don't need, or over a fire, I suppose. But we don't need to explain what's happening in terms of particles. A rise in temperature adequately captures the phenomena. Oh, God. Temperature is a perfectly good way to think about an aspect of reality as long as we don't assume it's a fundamental thing. Or temperature is secondhand for the relative population of high energy to low energy states. So infinite temperature is an equal number of particles in all energetic states, and zero temperature is the lowest occupancy. The same way, you just do a population census of states, and that is the temperature. I don't quite understand what they're talking about. The same would apply for time, says theoretical physicist Gloria Rahm of the Imperial College London. This way of thinking may even lead to an entirely different perspective on reality. Perhaps the reductionist approach of drilling down ever deeper and deeper to seek even more fundamental layers has its limit. Some physicists say we need to stop fixating on the elusive true nature of reality and focus on building a set of models that describes the various physical phenomena we observe. What we do is modelling, says Rahm. Well, what is model? Model is a model is an abstract, is a concept which we can run in our head. What is it? There's I suppose there's abstract, concrete, and mathematical. So a concrete model would be a physical box, an abstract would be words, and then mathematical. It's sort of hyper-abstract. A way to interpret what's going on doesn't necessarily need to be what in reality happens. One symbol considers questions, however, is how exact models ought to seek to explain reality. Some, such as the general relativity, take some known quantities about nature, position of planets, say, and predict what will happen next. Quantum theory takes a different philosophical approach, assigning future probabilities to the outcomes we might see. Okay, I'm a bit perturbed by that statement. But these aren't the only methods of explaining reality. Consider the much older branch of physics, thermodynamics, which is what I wouldn't call it older, but that's what I went when I mentioned Boltzmann, the science of heat, work and power. It doesn't seek to describe the fundamental nature of things, but instead rules that cannot happen. For it tells us that a scrambled egg cannot be unscrambled and the energy cannot be created or destroyed. I don't know whether it tells us the last one. Or heat is work. Yeah, and entropy always increases. Okay, some physicists are now exploring... I don't know if your definition of energy comes there. Some physicists are now exploring whether a similar approach can help us make headway. For example, constructor theory starts from... That's interesting. I think this is the general thing we have of inexpert people trying to construct some models for us. The idea of the essence of reality is information. I would agree with that. That you can't destroy information. Isn't that interesting? And then sets out what kind of things are possible and impossible. It is early days, but it has already made predictions in circumstances that defeat other theories, such as the behaviour of quantum particles and gravitational fields. I think this is boundary. You can't. It's like causality. It's sort of a second half causality. The next level. Where does it leave us? Our understanding of game is in a state of flux, but we are making progress, even if it isn't exactly what we hope for. Quote, if the question is, do we have a chance to see the next clear level of understanding, then yeah, I think we can get it. Severely. Even this is unlikely to be the last word, however. Ravelli thinks it will just reveal more holes in our understanding. If you want a theory of everything where it all fits, I see no hint that we're close. Zero, he says. It isn't even clear that our brains are actually capable of comprehending reality. Well, I don't think we can imagine reality, but we can have a degree of intelligibility. So, yeah, I think one of the problems is that it's either completely unimaginable, or then you have degrees of imagination. It's completely unintelligible, or you have degrees of intelligibility. Chimpanzees are intelligent, but could never grasp quantum theory or see why it's necessary. Similarly, I think that's the actual crux. I think that really gets into it. I wish I could interpret that. They can't see it, but I think that is the most wise theme in terms of the sociology of reality, is that people, like common sense to reality, is people very rarely feel that they need to understand more to it, because it's enough for them to get by. So why would they need to know? I think that's perhaps the best point getting here. Similarly, there may be some fundamental limit to human cognition that prevents us from getting a big picture. Maybe a superintelligent machine may once a day soon. But I think there's that, but you can say that the education system definitely dumps us down. From the human perspective, a more fundamental description of reality only promises to shift the true nature of reality yet further from our everyday experiences of it. Quite a feat, given the extent to which quantum theory and relativity have already done so. When I wake up in the morning, for sure, that's my reality, says Ram. But there is definitely something more fundamental that I will never be able to experience. For all of our efforts to pin it down, reality just keeps on getting bigger and more bewildering. I think there is aspects of it. I think it is... what did they say? They don't understand it. They don't understand it and are not motivated to it. I think that's a fundamental thing. I wish I could get that one. How did reality get started? That was Joshua Howe-Gigo. This is a new little article. And even though we don't fully understand what reality is and may never do so, that doesn't stop us from asking where it came from. It will come as no surprise that answering this question is far from easy. Just ask the people whose day job it is. They don't agree on much, except that it's a tough gig. Quote, We are in some difficult situations, says Daniel Orati of the Max Planck Institute of Gravitational Physics in Germany. Oh, she'd be really interesting to chat to him. We are fishes in the pond and trying to infer the situation of our pond. The conventional origin story of the pond is the Big Bang. In this account, the universe simply popped into existence of nothingness 13.8 billion years ago, triggering an expansion that continued without pause ever since. There's a picture that aligns with the available evidence, such as the ongoing expansion of the universe, but hasn't yet been definitively accepted. Where does this person... Has anyone ever published something which has contradicted the Big Bang? I don't understand. I don't think so. I think this person's probably on the rankest of the wanker. Perhaps it's no surprise, given the untotal core of the Big Bang theory, how nothingness can give rise to an entire universe. Another major stumbling block is the moment just after the universe popped into existence, when its entirety would have been concentrated into the point of infinite density and temperature. Quote, "We don't have any theory that describes the universe at ultra-high temperature and ultra-high density," says this is a Dutch name, IJS of the Max Planck Institute for Gravitational Physics. "That means our knowledge of the first instance remains fundamentally incomplete. Better theories might yet fill these gaps, or might render them obsolete by showing there was no beginning of space-time. That is an explanation Jars favors. She says our universe's beginning coincided with the previous universe's end. Think of it as an hourglass, the two halves connected by an incredibly narrow neck. In this model, the universe would once have a radius of 10 to the minus 25 centimeters, more than a billion times smaller than the radius of an electron." Oh, that is horrible. Who is this? Who is talking about a classical radius of an electron? They've got no idea. No. Oh, no. That's just the worst thing I've ever... Oh. As I say, someone has given me a kiss and vomited in my mouth. That's just such a revolting statement. Hey, guys. The radius of electron is 10 to the minus 19 centimetres. It's not... Centimetres. Oh, that makes me vomit. Oh, that makes me so sick. Small, but infinitely bigger than the nothingness required for the Big Bang. This hourglass model is known as a Big Bounce, and it's a dramatic consequence for reality because theoretical conditions dictate the preceding universe must have been similar to our own. Its origin must also be similar. That it is too would have begun from a collapse of a preceding universe and so throughout eternity. In our model, space-time never vanishes, as he just. In other words, reality has always existed and there is no beginning. Yeah. It's sort of like the TV's always on, there's always new programs. And that seems quite difficult to imagine. It's somewhat counterintuitive, she says. But the alternative, the total absence of reality before space-time into existence, is more difficult. It's definitely more... It's infinitely more difficult, she says. Why? I just forced a wank. I'm sorry, I really hate that one. What came before? Orit favours another alternative. For him, the Big Bang represents not the birth of the universe, but the moment the universe assumed its current form, with intelligible properties such as space and time. He compares it to a phase transition, such as the moment steam condenses into liquid water. All sorts of notions that you apply as a fish in water simply do not apply to a gas. Before this phase transition, notions of space-time are meaningless. The reality itself becomes fundamentally indescribable. Even the word before is inaccurate, says Ori. The notion of time ceases to apply. That's more because all phase transitions are, at least in theory, reversible. The universe could return to its timeless state again at the point in the future. Presumably, dark consequences for us, if the future is even the right word. His inability to talk about reality in everyday terms seems incredibly frustrating. We get frustrated as well, says Ori. I sympathise but get used to it. Reality, it seems, is truly beyond words. Oh, sorry, that's just... It's sort of like someone sent me the wet decaying fish. Okay. Is the reality the same everywhere, which is the universality, the universe principle for induction? You know, that you assume things. Travel everywhere in the known universe, like Coca-Cola, the laws of nature are always the same. What? That is a basic tenet of physics called the cosmological principle, or the universality principle from David Hume, which holds that our patch of the universe is representative of the rest, but we also can view it. As far as we can tell, it's true. Certainly the bits of the universe we can see and the laws of physics are uncannily the same, says Richard Bauer, Durham University in the UK. But an important caveat there is the bits we can see. What about those we can't? There are bits of the universe that are out of sight forever. These aren't exotic parallel universes conjured up by string theory or quantum mechanics. Oh, this, again, is making my head hurt, but an unavoidable consequence of workaday cosmology. Because the universe is expanding at breakneck speed, yet the speed of light is infinite, the outer reaches of the universe have disappeared over the cosmic horizons. No. I think this is completely stupid. We can see the Big Bang. We can see the first eras of time. Will eventually the Big Bang will travel so fast that we won't see the start of time? This is just deeply, deeply confused. Forever out of contact with light from which we never reach us. The known universe is the inside stretches about 46 billion light years in all directions. How much there is beyond there isn't known. This person is completely... He's the dumbest person I've ever come across. But it's possible there are places beyond the horizon where the laws of physics are different. The problem is, I don't think he's understood that the further you go away, you go further back in time. One reason for thinking this may be true is that our laws are bizarrely and arbitrary conducive to life. Cosmos call it this fine-tuning. If any laws of physics were slightly different, we couldn't exist. Just one example, if a strong nuclear force which holds protons and neutrons together while inside atoms was slightly... Or the nucleus, you mean, mate? If I have a proton, two protons inside... okay. Were slightly stronger, the sun would have exploded long before life got started on Earth. There are many other examples of I don't know why you say that. You need a few more statements there. Examples, collectively known as the Goldilocks paradox, because so many laws are just right. I would think the triple alpha resonance would be the major one for making carbon. And it's paradoxically, and this is paradoxical. It is, and paradoxical it is. There's no explanation for why we are why the value they are. We've just got to go, that's the way it is. I don't think that's necessarily true. The odds of the universe with the exact specifications that constrain life are so low that many physicists argue there must be other places where the laws are different than many physicists. It just so happens that we live in a life-friendly patch of the universe because, well, it couldn't be the other way, any other way. And that's just our universe. There are almost certainly others. Multiverses are consequences of many theories, including black hole physics and string theory. Not all produce different laws of physics, but some do. In string theory, for instance, it conjures up 10 to the 500 universes, all with different laws of physics. Could we ever know if this is true? In reality, this and other universes, if they exist, are probably forever inaccessible to us. Quote, multi-universe theories must be, in principle, be taken quite seriously, but proposals to test them don't get very far, says Simon Fried of the University of Göttingen in the Netherlands. For now, we have to study what we can see. But there is an upside to this. It makes reality tractable. If there's just one universe, then we might have a good chance of discovering basically everything about physics, says Tim Blackwell of Goldsmiths, University of London. Unfortunately, that would be like assuming you understood biodiversity by cataloguing life on a small island. Reality may well be different everywhere, but the cosmos is too big for us to be, you know, Jason Aaron Mogesu. It's interesting that people are unaware of their ignorance. You need a process, a fine-tuned process, to remove ignorance from science. One of the things is that you need peer review to remove ignorance, and that's not happening with it. Can we, and this is the articles, just the size of electron, what did he go on? He said something just so awful. What did he say? That there's a universe beyond the Big Bang. I just... everyone knows we don't see of reality. I say we see none of it. Can we perceive reality? I don't know about you, but I feel that I have a perfectly good perception of reality inside my head. There's a vivid depiction of the world around me, replete with sounds, smells, colours, objects. So it's rather unsettling to discover this might be a fabrication. Some researchers have even contended that the life stream movies in the head bears no resemblance to reality whatsoever. In some senses, it's obvious that the subjective experience isn't the whole. Humans, unlike bees, don't normally see ultraviolet light. We can't sense the Earth's magnetic field. Unlike turtles, worms, wolves are deaf to high and low pitched noises. Other animals can hear and have a relatively weak sense of smell. On top of this, our brains present us with only a snapshot. If our senses took in every detail, we'd be overwhelmed. Did you notice the last time you blinked? Or that fleshy protuberance called your nose that's always in the peripheral vision? No, because your brain edits them out. A lot of our senses are doing is something like data compression, simplifying in order to enable it to function, says Mats Via Kunsa of the University of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In fact, most of you, quote, see is an illusion. Our eyes aren't all seeing, but capture fleeting glimpses of the outside world between rapid movements of called saccades. Saccades. During these, we're effectively blind because the brain doesn't process information that comes when it's happened. If you doubt this, stare into your own eyes in the mirror, then rapidly flick your gaze from one side to another and back again. Did you see your eyes move? This is the only start of it. The brain, after all, is sealed in darkness and silence with a solid casing of the skull. It has no direct access to the outside world. It also relies on information that reaches it via a few electrical cables from our sensory organs. Our eyes pick up information about wavelengths of electromagnetic radiation. Our ears detect vibrations of air particles. Our noses and mouths detect volatile molecules we experience as smells and flavours. Through complex process, we only partially understand our brain integrates these independent inputs in new form consciousness awareness. The question is, how well does this subjective internal picture represent objective reality? It is a contentious query, much debated by philosophers and physicists. What do we even mean by objective reality? For Don Hoffman, a psychologist at the University of California, Irvine, the author of The Case Against Reality, it is something that exists even if no creature perceives it. Although, ironically, some physicists may beg to differ. See, do we make reality, page 41. Oh, my God. But it's impossible to know anything about objective reality without involving perception and thought. This is why some people think there is no hard line between objective and subjective reality. Quote, if you have the notion that reality is something that is inherently different from mine, then it becomes paradoxical to think that we ever have access to reality, says Chirimbulta. Reality, quote, reality depends on us. It depends on the way we see the world. But at the same time, what we are perceiving is one aspect of reality because our perception is shaped by the senses we happen to have. Kind of blue. Take the colour blue. Physicists define the wavelengths of light, but for Chirimbulta, We can't remove perception from the equation. Blueness, she argues, isn't a property of an object, but a property of the interaction we have with it. Other animals probably experience their own version of reality. This logic also applies to the reality depicted by science. Quote, the world described by physics is also like another interpretation based on measurements taken with scientific instruments that reveals properties and processes that the human senses can't themselves latch onto. This is Chiramatru, which is goes towards, we can't imagine it, we can make it intelligible, we can make it intelligible via imagination, but we cannot imagine it. We can be fooled by it, but we can imagine. Others go further to argue that nothing we perceive bears any resemblance to reality, and that this action is actually helpful to see things as they really are. I think everybody recognises that we don't. Turning the page, oh my godfather. See all of reality. I'm saying we see none of reality, says Hoffman. To get your heads around this, imagine you are playing a virtual reality game. You might be driving a car, for instance, and see the steering wheel in your hands. But we all know that these objects don't really exist. They are a result of computer software renders them, says Hoffman. There is a reality to the game, but it is the software and the circuits in the computer. It would be impossible to play the game if we operated at this level. Instead, our brain perceives constructs such as the steering wheel, letting us play. Hoffman argues that this trickery doesn't just happen in video games, but every moment in our lives. Quote, I'm claiming that it is we're born in a virtual reality headset on. Evolution gave us the VR headset to simplify things, to give us what we need to play the game of life without knowing what reality is. According to this view, our brain and sensory system together make a use interface that simplifies the complexity of the world, in the same way that icons on a smartphone screen are tools to operate the gadget's underlying circuitry. Everything we see is reality, an abstract data structure for something that doesn't even exist in space and time, says Hoffman. This is a dissing view if you naively think that what you perceive reality represents the true nature of the world. Well, it's true, but I think you point a gun to someone's head, then you get a different answer. Quote, evolution has shaped us to see things that we have to take seriously, to see what we need to see alive, which is going to a gun to the head thing, isn't it? This is often. But that does not logically permit us to say that we are seeing the truth. How's that a dose of cold, hard reality, asks George? I don't know. Is your perception of reality the same as mine? Our conscious experience of reality may be nothing like the real thing, but do people at least share some misrepresentation? It's a reasonable assumption we do. All humans have roughly the same brains and sensory systems, and when we talk about our conscious experience, we all seem to be on the same page. But we cannot be sure. Why not? That's just a statement. We just cannot be sure. All right. Well, that's like, we used to do that in the army all the time. Someone would state a mission statement about the Missourians have broken out in South Australia, something like that. And someone would step at the end and say, or not, as the case may be. The only way we know you exist is as a conscious being is the experience of your own consciousness. The nature and even existence of other people's consciousness is a closed book. For all you know, everybody else is a zombie. I would think so. Yet, philosophical solipsism to one side, let's set philosophical solipsism to one side, however, and allow the other people to have conscious experience. Do they perceive the same events in the same way? The evidence suggests that they don't. If you have ever watched a football match and felt incredulity at the referee's decisions, take comfort for that. The opposing fans feel the same, although for the opposite reasons. Both sets will end up feeling that they were on the wrong end of the dodgy calls. This is, of course, isn't objectively possible, but since, because you can't be both wrong, someone has to be right, but since, did objectivity anything to do with reality? Oh, God. We perceive the world in relation to what reality we already believe. Surely you can't break the laws of physics, says Scotty. says Tully Schlott of the University College of London. This makes evolutionary sense because it allows us to create mental shortcuts. Evaluating every piece of information anew would give rise to scarce mental resources, says Charlotte. But the shortcuts open us up to many of the vices of modern world, the fake news and conspiracy theories. Oh, God. Surely you can get into bias. Bacon. Truth and lies. There is nothing new, yet the proliferation of digital media has shattered any notion of shared baseline reality that anyone can agree on. Instead, people can seal themselves into partisan filter bubbles and echo chambers, which encounter only information that confirms their worldviews. I don't know where this person's come from. This is not scientific. How is it that people can live in the same reality yet experience so differently? Well, this men and women, that's what I would say. One obvious answer is that we are being lied to. Another is that we seek to interpret our facts to fit our pre-existing beliefs because our traits are known as motivated reasoning, confirmation bias. I think the reality, you can't talk about reality without getting into bias, couldn't you? Both are undoubtedly at play, but research on how our brain deals with information has revealed that something weird is going on. It isn't merely a problem of interpretation, but our sensory perception itself. We literally see the world we want it to be. If you don't believe it, consider this experiment by Yung Chung Leung, now at the University of California, Berkeley. He scanned people's brains, they viewed a series of images of faces merged with scenes. Participants had to decide whether the image contained more face or more scene and were paid for the correct answers. Leung also threw in the occasional curveball, offering a pay bonus if the next image was more face and imposed a penalty if it was more scene and vice versa. Subject reported seeing what they had been told would become more profitable. It turned out that they weren't consciously fibbing about for profit. Activity patterns in the brain visual cortex suggested they were seeing what they were seeing. This motivated perception isn't unique to vision. Other studies suggest smell, taste, reasoning, memory are influenced too. Seems strange, but again, this evolutionary sense. The main goal of a perceptual system is to keep the brain alive so you can pass on your genes, says J. Van Bavel, the University of New York. You might assume that this would favour authentic perceptions, and mostly it does, but not always. We're social species, and sometimes group identity, tribal cohesion, and shared beliefs are more important than the truth, says Just Ask Football Fan. I suppose it's a beautiful way they put it together. Lael Liverpool, what a fantastic name. Sure, you're not going to pass me one more. Oh no, there's more pages here. I'm going to finish reading. I'm going to finish reading this last and go on to part two. At first blush, to suggest that we create reality sounds like a combination of arrogance and absurdity. Do we make reality? And yet, if you spend time pondering quantum theory, our most accurate description of reality at the most fundamental, it's hard to escape the idea that the world becomes real only when you're looking at it. Oh, don't stick my fingers down my throat, make me vomit. At the starting point of this peculiar fact, that observation seems to play a key part in transforming ambiguous quantum world into a definite picture, is now as classical reality. An electron, for instance, is said to be a superposition of many places at once because all quantum physicists, God, exists as a cloud of possibilities. Oh, Copenhagen School, you have struck again in an article. Just page after page of this shit. These possibilities are encoded in a mathematical entity called wave functions. Well, they just don't know what they're talking about, the unit it measured. At that point, the wave function collapses and the possibilities are reduced to one. The electron assumes a single definite position and state, something we call, recognized as real. This is making sick reading this. Okay. That much is well established, my God. But the word measured is a weaseled one. Collapse happens on every measurement, but measurement is vague and anthropocentric and seemingly inappropriate to play a role in the fundamental description of reality, says Kevin McQueen, a philosopher of quantum physics. A philosopher of quantum physics at Chapman University in California? What? Ah, oh, God, these people. Firstly, I mean, if you don't understand quantum complex numbers, consider the double-slit experiment in which a beam of light is shone through two side-by-side slits into a screen, the classic demonstration of particle duality. One of the things that I don't think they understand is that the you're told the actual light source has to be, it can't be an incoherent light source. It's got to be a coherent light source, or a light source going from sufficiently far away. Maybe one of the things. Okay, I just find this disgusting. This one can set up a force wave function to collapse as revealed as a pattern on the light screen. But when the measurement actually happens, when the light passes through the slit or the screen, now the image replacing the screen with a photographic plate that you don't develop until later. Again, when does the measurement happen? The measurement problem is one of the biggest mysteries in physics. My brain's hurting because there's this aspect to Young's slit experiment, which is the distance of the source to the double slit. So if it's an incoherent source right up against the double slit, you won't get the diffraction pattern. It's got to be far enough away. So you get coherent wavelengths. Unless, of course, you take seriously the notion that the wave function collapse is brought about by non-measurement, but the intervention of a conscious observer. John Wheeler at Princeton University was among the most eloquent proponents of the viewpoint. Nothing is more astonishing about quantum mechanics than allowing one to consider that seriously the universe would be nothing without observership, he wrote. My God, he's good. I think this is Wheeler of general relativity. He was okay. This quantum physics, he's hot, dreadful. The idea raises some difficult questions, none of which it's easy to resolve. For one thing, consciousness is arguably no less vague than measurement, even if it's integrated information theory, IIT, which offers mathematical measure of it, yet must show otherwise. That's just, this is just really poor science education on display, page after page. We've got the things with the electrons have a radius, we've got the things outside the universe, and we've got the stupidity of the Copenhagen School on fuel. Oh, it goes on. Nature of reality before consciousness, mind existed. Without anything to do the collapsing, the universe might have looked very weird, perhaps something like the many worlds interpretation of quantum theory, which holds that everything that could happen does. In an infinite number of parallel universes, according to this idea, every time a decision is made, the universe splits in two, with one outcome and one outside. Pre-consciousness reality may have been a multiverse. Oh my God. Where every possible outcome is happening somewhere. Unfortunately, what hope does the world have with this people? I'm just embarrassed anyone has paid money for this magazine. Intimate objects, inanimate objects. But not necessarily, says McQueen, because IIT rejects the idea that consciousness is exclusive to humans and other complex organisms. Even inanimate objects may possess a rudimentary form of consciousness. Indeed, consciousness itself may be a fundamental property of matter. Oh, God. If so, oh my God, if so, then there was no such thing as a preconscious universe. In any case, largely for want of a better alternative, it's been impossible to erase the consciousness observer from quantum mechanics. If anything, subjectivity has recently begun to reassert its centrality in making objective reality. Take quantum Bayerism, I like that, RD, QBism, a relatively new interpretation of quantum theory. It holds that wave function collapse is caused by observer updating their knowledge. There is no objective reality, only a subjective estimation of it. That's... if I can just make a comment here, if you try to observe quantum mechanics and you have, in reality, non-quantum mechanical observation engines, you're going to get yourself really upset, up the poo. That's too much for most physicists. But Marcus Muller, the University of Vienna, Austria, doesn't go far enough. Muller is working on a model that suggests how an objective external world, including the laws of nature, can arise from subjective experience. What my approach claims is that physical reality is fundamentally observer relative, but in an objective way, he says. That clearly needs some unpacking. My God, you need to be put in a mental asylum, mate. The idea is rooted in the probabilistic used by AI researchers to help machines make predictions about the world, discovering regularities of the limited data they hold. In Muller's approach, the algorithmic probability is applied in reverse. It's not that the world is fundamental, but the information and the probabilistic law, which happen to give observers their impression of the physical world, is consistent with the law of nature. To the extent that Muller's ideas can be tested, the math seems to work out. His ideas have won praise as an unusually well-defined attempt to formulate fundamental theory of reality from first-person perspective. Oh my God. Muller's proposal is extremely interesting, says McQueen. It effectively aims to resurrect an old idea in philosophy known as idealism, according to which experiences are not caused by pre-existing physical reality, but actually composed of all the reality there is. Einstein wouldn't have been so generous. When the founders of quantum theory and mechanics first raised the notion that we make reality, he pointedly asked if the moon vanishes when you turn your back. He was, however, humble enough to admit he might be wrong. One assumes the real world independently from any act of perception, he wrote in 55, just when he cacked it. But this we do not know. We still don't. But the idea that subjective reality is all there is has to be taken as a very real possibility. Ah, this is just... it's doing my head in. I'll have to... So this is just a display of really poor science. I think it's sort of like bad oil in a car. If you put cooling oil in your car, you're just going to get crap like this. I have to really think through the complexities of entanglement and double slit experiment. But there's some interesting things you can say about it. I'm running out of gas, my friend, and so there's more to this article to read, but I'll get this off. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.